You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, Brad Faxon will be here to tell us what to expect from Tiger Woods at the U.S. Open this weekend. We start today with Kevin Durant. We're all justifiably trying to make sense of what happened to NBA superstar Kevin Durant. Durant, of course, injured his Achilles in Game 5 of the NBA Finals. After sitting for a month with a strained calf muscle, it's clear now the Warriors rushed Durant back to play and put too much of a burden on him in his return.
Man.
But now we're going deeper. We're looking for the why and the what should we learn from this. Yesterday, former NBA star and current ESPN broadcaster Jalen Rose said he blames the overall culture of sports and a herd mentality among professional athletes. He said Durant was forced to return based on the chatter that he's soft, really didn't want it, and wasn't committed to the Warriors. Via Twitter, NFL star Richard Sherman scolded other athletes for questioning Durant's decision to play. Sherman wrote, "It really frustrates me listening to current and former players act like anyone could have kept KD from playing last night. Every single athlete worth their weight dreams of playing in the championship game of their sport, and most of us are making that same decision. Hashtag stop the BS." Rose and Sherman make interesting and defensible points. But I don't fully agree, particularly with Rose.
Really?
The culture of sports is to blame, maybe 20 or 30 years ago. Back then, we celebrated Ronnie Lott for cutting off the tip of his pinky finger so he could be ready for the start of the 1986 season. Back then, we made movies like Rocky, where our hero told his quarterman, "I can't see anything. You got to open my eye. Cut me, Mick." Better or worse, you decide. Those days are long gone.
Adrian.
Those days are regarded as toxic and barbaric. If Karl Malone elbowed Isaiah Thomas and caused 40 stitches today, he would likely be charged with criminal assault. An NBA fan slash owner pushed Kyle Lowry, and people called it assault. The culture of sports is soft. There's too much money being made for it not to be. Athletes are justified to be protecting themselves. Whether it be Kawhi Leonard refusing to play in San Antonio or college football players declining to play in bowl games, today's athletes are making far different decisions than their predecessors. So rather than blame the culture of sports for the Durant tragedy, let's blame the real culprit, the culture of social media. Social media is the new Jack Tatum, the Oakland Raiders safety who wrote the book, "They Call Me an Assassin." Social media is the assassin of character. That's the toxic culture that climbed into Durant's head and provoked him to risk everything. For the most part, media people and former athletes have complained that Durant was soft for leaving OKC and going to Golden State. I'm unaware of any credible person questioning Durant's toughness as it relates to this injury. I'm aware of credible people questioning the thickness of Durant's skin because of the way he responds to his critics on social media. Durant is a cautionary tale about social media addiction. That's the story here. We're all, to some degree, addicted to the noise coming from our so-called smartphones. Durant is addicted at a dangerous level. The people close to him share his addiction. His mom has a Twitter feed based off being Durant's mom. He's not alone. Steph Curry's wife is her own social media brand. Draymond's mom is active on Twitter. They used to say a family that prays together stays together. Now families tweet together and beef with trolls together. I blame that for Durant's tragedy far more than the modern culture of sports. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NBA analyst Katino Mobley and Bleacher Report's Rick Bucher. Marcellus, I'll start with you. Who's more to blame, sports culture or social media culture for Durant?
Well done, Whitlock. I'm going to blame the sports culture. First, let's not even go into the alternative here when we're talking about social media and then how it's a softer sports world. Remember No Mas, 1980?
Yeah, Roberto Durant, No Mas.
Tap out, right? Tap out.
They beat him up pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Social media, what Facebook was looking like in 1980? Oh, so we got countless examples. I'm not going to dumb it down with that. Let's talk about what Durant went through in the sports culture. I've been here before. I think there are a few elements we must highlight. First, every single athlete that I know, once they get a contract, once they're big time, wants to earn their keep. I think that's a commonality with all work cultures. Hey, I'm here. They paid me. I want to earn my keep. I want to live up to this title. After that, when you get injured, this is what happens. People start knocking at your door. Remember who these people are. They know your address. They're close to you. They're your teammates. They're your coaches. They're the executives. Here's what first happens. Your teammates come up to you. They don't ask you, how are you doing? They say, you good, right? A little suggestive, a little leaning. You good, right? And then your coach is looking at you like, man, half of you is better than most of all the other players in this league. You can be all right, KD, right? I mean, it's just all this leaning in with pressure, the organization. And look, I've been there before. So when that starts to occur, what happens is the knocking at the door. Even if you don't open a door, it's disturbing your peace. What happens then? That knocking gets louder and louder. It clouds your judgment. It clouds your vision. To sooner than later, you may relent and open the door to people you're familiar with, people you love to work with. So that's what happened to Kevin Durant. I am as guilty as him. I'm as guilty as Richard Sherman. I'm as guilty as every player I've ever seen in that exact same moment. You cave into that pressure to open the door to those you feel.
I would agree with that. But because it's Kevin Durant, I would go 70-30 social media. 60-40 social media. That's me, right? And then the other 40 or the 30 would be more so sports culture, right? Because we've been taught since kids to fight through pain, right? No one's 100% after like 12, 14 years old. You're always spraining ankles or doing something.
Yeah.
I think if it was someone else, different. But because it's Kevin, and Kevin responds so much to social media, as soon as, I don't know what he does, but as soon as it seems like, as soon as he wakes up, he's literally looking at that phone, which in his brain, yeah, you're from the East Coast, yeah, you're tough, yeah, you want to prove, but yet that's more incentive that I have to go out there and prove. And he's a very loyal person, too. Loyal not just to his players and his teammates, even though he may leave, but loyal to his base, his fan base, his where he's from, right? And where we're from is you fight through it. You named the Rocky thing. We fighting through these different things. And I think that's what hurt Kevin, listening to that, hearing the tweets, hearing the Instagram, hearing all these things. I think that's what put more of the pressure on it. And to you, Marcellus, what you're saying is that passive aggressive, you all right, right? I think all of that takes a toll with Kevin because if it was, like I said before, if it was anybody else, different. But because it's Kevin and he caters so much towards social media, I think that's put the pressure on him.
Quick story, Karl Malone. You never saw him wear sleeve, elbow, nothing. He had a sprained knee at one point, and he put a sleeve on it. Jerry Sloan walked into the locker room and said, "You're not going to wear that blank rag, are you?" Karl Malone went out on the court. He wasn't wearing anything on his knee. That's the passive aggressive that you speak of. That's the it didn't have anything to do with how Karl
1980.
Exactly. But fair.
90s.
We've
culture's
seen
still there though. That culture's still there.
Yeah, we've seen Kevin Durant respond to social media. Have we seen him act upon social media? Have we seen him do anything on the court?
Burner account.
To answer. No. That's still in the social media
world.
I'm talking about somebody accuses him of something and then he therefore acts different.
Yeah, we just saw it in this game five.
No, this was about a closeout game. This was about looking at the guys around that locker room and saying, Klay Thompson's playing with a strained hamstring. DeMarcus Cousins is playing with a bad quad. Andre Iguodala is playing with a bad calf. How can I not strap it up and go out there and do the same for them and risk it? Mm-hmm. To me, that had a lot more to do with his decision and the sports culture of, I don't want to walk away from this opportunity of winning three in a row. Mm. It's that.
Yeah.
Damn my future. Damn my health tomorrow. I'm going to play for today. That's what we consider as noble. Even the Warriors, Joe Lacob said, we respect that he did this. I take great issue with that. No,
that was a passive-aggressive shot, yeah.
Without question. Yeah. But that's the whole mentality that he is surrounded by, and that's what he was answering to.
Okay, but Rick, here's what I believe, Rick and Marcel. If you turn off social media, if we could go back 10 years and there's no social media, I think he makes a different decision.
I think he makes
today.
The
exact same. Give me some evidence why it would be different.
Because, again, I'm looking at athletes make different decisions. There's an athlete
I agree with that.
Named Kawhi Leonard who's not a part of social media, and I think that's why he was able to make the decisions he did in San Antonio. That's a guy that basically a lot of these, they put on headphones, they block out the world. KD's not one of those guys. I'm looking at college football players, kids, you know, them bowl games, coach, and fuck, y'all can keep that. I'm good. I'm looking at guys make decisions they never used to make, and now they have the leverage to.
It's just pure pressure. That's a lot of social media, pure pressure. And what you said, Rick, is spot on. Yes, I think because he loves the game. He loves his guys. He sees. He's aware. And when you're aware, not just aware in the locker room, you're aware of social media. You're aware of everything that's going on. So us, Marcellus, like I said before, us learning how to play through pain, learning that my other guys are out there and they're going to lay it out, I'm going to do that. Now, mix that with my social media situation that's going on.
Yeah.
And now this Kawhi Leonard, he ignores a lot of stuff.
Okay, let me get this
straight. Kevin, don't ignore those things. I think that's what put the pressure
on. Let's not make Kawhi Leonard analogous to KD in this moment. First of all, that wasn't a championship moment for Kawhi. He tapped out of a regular season. And he was misdiagnosed. So him being misdiagnosed second time around, I've learned from that experience. KD, going forward, coming around next time, he's going to learn from this experience.
He was misdiagnosed, but he had a second opinion. KD didn't get a second opinion.
No, KD had his own team of doctors, so it's not even second opinion. It's like someone has to be in alignment to what you're saying. That said, this whole era changed because of social media. I disapprove of that line of demarcation for this. Back in your day, back in the day before yours, 80s, early 90s, those guys were deemed tougher. Mm-hmm. And we deemed them tougher because, you know what? It seemed like they fought through everything. Mm-hmm. You know why they did? Because they didn't have any options. And you know what we got now? We're smarter. But that doesn't mean we're softer. We're just smarter.
You're not only smarter.
But that's my
point. But you're more financially secure.
That's the distinction.
That's my point.
But that's not social media influenced.
But I think
that's bank account and me understanding the game.
They have more options and they're making different decisions. They have more power, more leverage, and they're making different decisions. And again, I said sports culture is soft, but I'm also saying it has to be because you now have more leverage. You're making so much money. The decision, Kevin Durant, $35, $40 million on the line per year. Of course, and Kawhi.
But he rolled the dice on that.
Why would anybody ever call Kevin soft? He's never been soft.
Well, we know it's out there.
I would never call Kevin Durant.
He was called Cupcake coming out
of Oklahoma City. That's about going switching
teams. I just think that was feelings. I don't think that's who he is.
I agree with that, but that's what he was accused
that's
of.
That's accused, right.
About decision-making with team. In terms of his physical toughness on the court, I don't think that's ever really been questioned.
But we blend those two. And the thing, going back to the financial aspect of it, and I was struck by this because I talked to Will Blackman, and I've noticed a lot of NFL players you go out and play. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't think about the physical ramifications. Mm-hmm. Well, it's because most NFL players are not in the place of an NBA player.
Right.
Yes.
The money is guaranteed.
Right.
So I need to figure out how do I handle my career long term because I'm good right now. Right. For an NFL player, you don't show up for work. You're not getting paid. Chances are you're getting cut.
Let's add some nuance to that because, again, it's like Carson Wentz just got a contract with $107 million guaranteed dollars. Is the whole contract guaranteed? No.
No.
But the top echelon of the NFL, those signing bonuses guarantee your contracts for 2 or 3 years.
Right.
You don't get the long-term 5-year deals that are guaranteed like the NBA. But there are some guarantees for the top players in the NFL. And look, I'm looking at NFL players make different decisions. Nobody's cutting off a pinky finger anymore, and no one's being celebrated if they do.
Well, you know why? Let me tell you real. Let me testify for a second. Mm-hmm. My situation, I went, had a back surgery, played through it because it was my contract year. Boom, got paid. Went to San Diego, broke my foot before the first game. Sitting there, that pressure, passive aggressive, every teammate. You just got $40 million, Wiley, and you're not going to play? All right, I get it. Must be nice to be you. Coach is looking at you like, wow, you're not going to earn your keep, but hey, we see you next year. All those jokes made me get a surgery when I was secure. Get a surgery, played through that with one foot, didn't practice one time. Guess what? Made the Pro Bowl. Uh-oh, I'm on top of the world. Back surgery, no foot, I'm killing the game. Guess what it did to me? Pushed me so close to the edge, I went south, game over, compensation, injury after injury. And my point is, NFL players will plow through it without the foresight. Thank God there's now an Andrew Luck, mm-hmm. who said, I ain't plowing through this shoulder injury. Right. Thank God there was a Kawhi Leonard. I'm not plowing through it. But I'm just trying to make sure we make a distinction between learning the game and learning what your followers are saying on social media. Because I wasn't influenced by social media.
I just think it's
more And I don't think the Andrew Luck was
But I just strong. Think it's more influential because at the end of the day, when we got bullied, when we were younger, it was a dude walking down the street with his friends and you was by yourself. That was the bullying. Now the bullying is what?
Cyber.
On social media.
Cyber.
Right. So how can you bully me on social media if it's on social? You're not touching me.
Yeah.
So we looking at it like that. All you got to do is turn it off, mm-hmm. right?
Uh-huh.
So that's just kind of like what I'm saying. When you have so many people talking to you and every single day you wake up early in the morning,
programming.
And the first thing you look at is that your program,
yeah.
not only because we're athletes, but your program to not just listen to your peers and the coaches and your executives, you're listening to people who really don't matter.
Of affirmation.
Let me give you another one, Marcellus.
Give it to me.
That I think... And we'll get into it here in the next segment, but we'll touch it here briefly. Just imagine you're an experienced member of the media now. 10 years, Rick 30 years, me 30 years, you know. And so we understand the noise. But imagine when the people closest to you who have no experience are also, let me jump on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Baby, did you hear they said this? KD's mother on social media. Draymond's mama on social media. Steph Curry's on social media. Everybody, it's the whole family is waking up, checking.
You hear what their they
Twitter
say?
You hear what they say, blah, blah. And that had, and again, that's, you know, my parents are older and people, but people I get close to me. I don't want them involved in the social media thing at all. I actually like, oh, you don't watch my show? You don't know nothing about me? You don't know nothing about this world? That's a positive, because I don't want to hear none of it when I come home.
Yeah, I will say this, Whitlock, to that. I give this entire generation a pass because they are first generation mm-hmm. social media.
Right.
There are no elders that can game you about social media.
Right.
So especially when your elder is actually on your level playing field, playing the game with you, you're not an elder statesman. Mm-hmm. You have no more wisdom and experience in this than I do. So they're both the windshield. And we know what happens to the windshield. It gets all the bugs, right? And that's what's happening right now. But I do give them a pass in that experience since they're all going through it for the first time.
It comes down to this. If the locker room was telling KD, brah, don't play, we got this. If the team was saying, don't play, we got this. It wouldn't matter what social media said,
mm-hmm.
but they weren't.
Exactly.
The two were in tandem.
Right.
They
exactly.
were both saying AD needs to play.
Reach.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Catino Mobley and Rick Bucher are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Kevin Durant, who has yet to face the media since his Achilles injury Monday night. But that hasn't stopped his mother, Wanda, from weighing in. Right after the injury, she took to Twitter to cry her son's critics. And now she's taking it up a notch, appearing on Good Morning America today and calling out the Warriors' medical staff.
The doctors said that he was okay. Kevin couldn't have gone on his own to say, I'm going to play.
True.
Without the advisement of the doctors. And so they said that he was okay. And so, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, he's a man.
They shared responsibility for him playing.
All right, the question here, okay with KD's mom addressing his injury on national TV? And I'll just say, I wish she wouldn't. I, you know, there used to be an era where all the parents and uncles and everybody wasn't part of the story and didn't have a voice in the stories. And maybe there's some value to that. So sometimes, you know, saying less is more.
The times have changed, Mr. Whitlock. This is a good cop, bad cop situation brewing right now, potential lawsuit as well, as I'm reading through the tea leaves of this. First of all, the optics. She's doing an interview. Didn't need the content, didn't really get much from the content. But you know what I got? An opposing opinion from the narrative that is starting to shape coming from Golden State and its controlled messaging. Remember, Bob Myers, I'm the only one talking about this. Remember, team of doctors. So who knows what conflicts occurred in that prognosis and diagnosis. So what you're starting to see is someone saying, hey, there's just an opposing force out there that may have a difference of opinion. But you got to remember, his landscape potentially has changed forever. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, and I was given bad information, oh, we have something to talk about. So right now, I think KD and his mom are playing a little good cop, bad cop. KD put out the fun, loving, hey, tequila, life shot, go boys, win game six. Mama's like, well, there's some things that, you know, sounded a little different. We'll see how this plays out. But certainly, I could feel the contention in the air.
Yeah, the difficulty is that there's just been so much gray area here. We're not clear on where the Warriors are. Was it a calf injury? Was it the Achilles? Were they connected? How did he get better? How bad was it? And to have Mama come out on Good Morning America, and now we hadn't heard from her forever. Mm-hmm. There hasn't even been a defined diagnosis. I've been hearing since this morning that he's already had surgery. Now, I haven't been able to confirm that with the Warriors or with Kevin Durant's camp, but that's where it's more uncertainty. So to have Mom jumping in, this is yet another voice, when I'm not even sure what the connection is between KD and his mom right now. That's not clearly defined.
Mm. Where's Rich Kleiman? He's paid to handle this.
Yeah, well, somebody needs to be stepping forward and taking the reins from both sides of the equation, and it doesn't sound like that's the case.
And, you know, it's his first generation again, like you were saying, Marcellus, right, in the last segment. This is a first generation thing where the parents are more outspoken, LeVar Bells, the moms of the world and blah, blah, blah. I wouldn't want my mom speaking out, especially when it's a gray area like this, because at first I thought it was just a calf, you know, and it takes at least 60 days because I've done it three times. You've done it yourself.
Yes.
It comes to find out now it's an Achilles. Was it the Achilles the first time? I don't know. So to go out there and speak so soon and have all these speculations.
But that's the genius in it. The genius in it is, one, mom goes out there, sympathetic figure, who's going to attack mom fully. Two, she knows the onion. She knows the layers. She knows what her son was going through all through this process. She talked to KD 5 minutes after the injury the other night. What that tells me is someone from our side needs to just poke their head out there just a little, say, maybe difference of opinion is coming based on what this landscape looks like going forward.
Look, I've said this forever for the last, I'd say, 15 years. The sports world is becoming just like the Hollywood world. You got a lot of stage parents. We expect it in Hollywood, and they're all involved, and they never let go, and things get muddy and messy. And so, where's Rich Kleiman? Because we heard B.J. Armstrong yesterday say he had some heart-to-heart conversations with Derrick Rose and talked Derrick Rose into making different decisions. I want to hear from Rich Kleiman. What was his conversations like with Kevin Durant? He's the guy that's supposed to be with some expertise and helping him navigate this situation. Mama can love you and do the best she can, but I don't think she's ever laced him up. She has no experience in this world. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, B.J. Armstrong and Rick Bucher are back. Let's move to the Raptors, who came up just short of the win last night, despite a late-game takeover by Kawhi Leonard that briefly gave Toronto the lead. Kawhi's been a dominant force in these playoffs, and before last night's game, he credited load management for his success, skipping 22 games in the regular season. After watching Kevin Durant's injury, it's hard to believe that load management won't be an even bigger topic going forward. Last night, to me, it was the first thing I thought about. Kawhi Leonard's going up. Mm. And Kevin Durant just took a big spill.
Yeah.
And Kawhi Leonard skipped 22 games. And the NBA has been changed forever. The 82-game schedule has an expiration point because these superstar players are not going to play 82, and the NBA is going to have to adjust its schedule.
Yeah, and I saw this coming. I think we all did. Now we're starting to connect the dots. Let's go back to LeBron James, who spends reportedly $1.5 million annually on his body. Let's just say he knows what his body's about. What did he start doing to the metrics? Becoming one of the slowest players in the NBA, despite being one of the greatest talents we've ever seen play basketball. That was a conscious effort. What did we see with teams start to understand? And even LeBron James made mention of this. What's the use of winning 73 games and you can't even win a championship? You didn't have enough at the end of the season. What does James Harden show us every postseason? There's a certain fatigue for going out there trying to win the regular season MVP instead of putting yourself in position for the finals MVP. Kawhi Leonard, by the numbers, has never played more than 74 games in his 8 seasons. KD has done that 7 times. As you said, one trajectory going one way, one going the other. Derek Coleman is cited in the article by Frank Isola about how he may have started load management, but I wasn't in the NBA.
Bruce, I played with Derek Coleman.
You played with Derek Coleman, so you know what he said. Hey, coach, I can give it to you when you need it most. You want it in practice or in the game? I give you the story.
That was weed management, but go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. A little more than load. A little more than the load. Bruce Smith, on the sidelines, Marv Levy, great coach sitting there. And Bruce was sitting there just being a veteran, being a Hall of Famer, getting mental reps more than physical reps. Marv wanted him to step it up, set an example. Bruce said, hey, Marv, I could give it to you when you want it most. Is that Wednesday or Sunday? Is that Thursday or Sunday? Is that Friday or Sunday? Because I'm only going to give it to you once. We realized what the point was. And that was 20 years ago. These players are understanding to run the marathon, you got to pace yourself. And it's going to be a smart play and a change going forward.
The issue I have is that there's a negativity around load management. Like these guys are trying to get away with something or that they're trying to cut corners. And that's where I take exception to the comparison to Derek Coleman. Still get paid, but what's
fans
the smart
still
play?
Pay full price for the tickets. That's where the complaints are coming from.
I understand the complaint, but I look at Kawhi Leonard and I look at Derrick Rose and the decisions they made in not to play. Kawhi Leonard may be on the precipice of winning finals MVP and winning a championship. Where's Kevin Durant? Because he gave in to the other. He gave in to the noise. So I don't buy that. The problem that I have is the game has changed.
Yes.
The game is played at a much faster pace with greater athletes.
Right.
There are more possessions. There is more being asked of these guys on a nightly basis from a physical standpoint that, whether you want to call it load management or whatever, to equate it with Derek deciding, you know what, I'm not up for shoot around. I'm not up for practice. I'll be ready for the games. Trust me on that, is different than this. This is a matter of survival. We're seeing it. We're seeing these guys spend more money and do more conditioning than ever before and still breaking down physically.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me that the game is asking more of them and we need to be smarter in what we ask them to do.
And Rick is absolutely right. The game has changed. Now we hear this term pace and space. Okay, when I played, you know, some 20 years ago, there was an off season. The NBA is a year-round workload now. Right, we're going straight from the playoffs. We're going to go right to summer league. Everyone's talking about grind, and they got to work out in the summer.
Yeah,
taking time off is part of your recovery. Recovery, right? Resting is part of the recovery process. And when you have these people playing all the time, and there's no time off, this is what's going to happen. So, you know, when we played, our summers were our summers. We took that time off because we knew we were going to play deep in the playoffs. But now, everyone is playing, and the game is so much faster than it was 20, 25 years ago that you're seeing it. And I'll say this. The way these kids play, crossing over, step backs, those things take its toll. The body wasn't made to do that. Okay, Derrick Rose and Russell Westbrook, when I played, I was 165 pounds soaking wet. These kids are 205, 210 pounds doing the things that the body shouldn't be doing at the point guard position. These guards are playing over the top. Kevin Durant is 7 feet.
Bringing the ball up.
Bringing the ball. Porzingis and these guys are doing things that we just didn't see 7-footers do, which now is putting stress on the body that we just don't know. Yeah. And these kids are ahead of the science because we don't know what they're doing physically.
That's a hell of a point because just think about all the 7-footers in your era and before. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar wasn't called.
Yeah. And you waited for him to get down the court. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like leading them, right? Yeah.
He wasn't in frame.
Very deliberate steps, and then you take the sky hook and trot back down the other way. Right. And so the game is, again, I want to go back to, though, is can the 82-game season survive this? We've already heard Adam Silver hint that some adjustments may be coming. I think it's inevitable.
Well, to your point, in the rigorous game we have as a team sport, football, there was an offseason when I was drafted. It was a mandatory minicamp. That's it. They've added voluntary minicamps. They added OTAs and all these coaching sessions. That has taken its toll to the point where they now made a rule change. No consecutive full padded practices. Oh. Now you see Kawhi Leonard, who says, this year I had no consecutive game back-to-backs. So what you have to do is, if they're not going to change it by the aggregate number of 82, then you're going to edit it. So, yeah, going forward, load management has to be the way.
What's really interesting is that they're going to introduce this mid-season tournament idea. And I don't know how you do that around the All-Star game without reducing the stress elsewhere. You can't. I mean, that's where it's the great injustice in football. You want to add two more games, and we'll pay you a little bit more money.
I'll take
and
it.
we're going to take the quality of the game even further down. That's what the NBA, I hope, is smart enough to say. Yeah, we want to do more. We want to have more entertainment. We want to have more competition. Okay, but you have to take something away if you're going to add something.
They're going to take games away eventually, in my opinion. And BJ, being an agent, will players accept perhaps a little less money for less games?
Well, I don't think the players will want to accept that, but I think that will be the main goal for the owners is to say, yeah, well, it'll be like that will be the negotiation with the union. Right. As an agent, of course, you don't want that to happen. As a player, the players don't want to give up money, but I think that will be the core of the negotiation of saying we will take away the games if you take less money, and I think that will be negotiated.
And so if I'm Kawhi Leonard versus Jericho or Repco for Golden State, I have two different perspectives on that. Because Kawhi Leonard's gonna make $35 million a year, let's say. Right. Okay, now I'm gonna make 31. It could be, you know, he may make $2 million and have to be cut down to $1 million. That's real money. So there'll be some, but I get the superstars are always going to win.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to win. This is always going to be a star league. But what I think the owners will compromise will be the length of the contracts. You won't see as many 4 to 5 year contracts, and they'll reduce them because you're beginning to see that now with 1 year, 2 year deals, which will somehow, they'll figure out, you know, what will be the best moving forward for all the teams.
Well, tell me this, because it hasn't come to a head yet, because the network contracts are already on the books.
Right.
So guess what? Right now, the owners make money two ways, mostly from the television contracts and then in-game experience. They want 41 home games, parking, concessions, ticket prices, memorabilia. Now you start to take that away. So it's one thing to say Kawhi won't be here, but people are still going to show up to the Raptors arena. Now, there's just not a game for me to make that extra money. I think that the owner's going to balk at that a little more than we anticipate.
They probably will. There are other revenue streams, though, that they can exploit globally.
Yeah. All right, coming up, is Justin Bieber headed for an MMA showdown with Tom Cruise?
Oh, my.
TV's hottest look at social media.
What has happened to the sport?
Tiger Woods returns to Pebble Beach, the site of his most dominant major win, while Brooks Koepka is looking to make history as he attempts to capture his third straight championship. The U.S. Open begins tomorrow at 12:30 Eastern on FS1 and continues on Fox at 7:30 Eastern, or watch it all on the Fox Sports app. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, we are joined now by Fox Sports golf analyst Brad Faxon, who is at Pebble Beach for this week's U.S. Open. All right, Brad, I want to start here. My contention, Tiger at 43, much more strategic and picks and chooses the tournaments he feels like he can win. I don't think he thought he could win at Bethpage Black in the PGA Championship. I do think he circled the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach as a course that would work for him. I think the reason he didn't play before the PGA is because he didn't take it that serious, played the Memorial because he believes he can win here. Your reaction?
No doubt about it. But first of all, I want to tell you, you're going to give this Koepka another little edge here by slighting him again and not talking about him before you talk about Tiger Woods.
Oh, I'm good with that.
Okay, I know. That'll be, we need him to make history. But listen, Tiger Woods knows this place better than any golfer in the championship, save maybe Phil Mickelson, who's another great story. But what's going to help Tiger here the most is it's a course that you don't have to hit a lot of drivers on. And Tiger didn't drive it that well at Bethpage. He played a good last round of the Memorial, like you said. But if he can hit three woods, if he can get in the fairway, we know that he's the best iron player on the tour. He's leading the tour this year in greens and regulation, which is a huge stat out here at Pebble Beach, and these small, tiny greens. So he's putting well. We just showed at the end of the show, we were watching his group play today with Jordan Spieth and Kevin Kistner, and Tiger was just rolling in putt after putt. He looked really comfortable.
Now, Whitlock was there in 2000 when Tiger Woods won by 15 strokes, says it was a magical moment, looked that way from television. Can Tiger recapture that energy, that moment, this weekend?
No doubt about it. And one of the things that we know for certain was after he won the Masters, he celebrated for a while. He had a bunch of time off, and his next event he played was the PGA Championship, like you said, on the opening. And he took 5 weeks off, played a PGA, which was moved from August into May. So I don't think he was ready to play mentally or physically. It showed in the way he looked and walked. Now he's had a break. He went back to the Memorial Tournament. He's won several times and very comfortable, and he's the same way here.
All right, Brad, we can jump right ahead to Brooks Koepka because, look, right. I love Brooks. I'm someone that believes it is fair to compare Koepka to Woods. I didn't believe that about Rory. I didn't believe it about Jordan Spieth. I do believe it about Brooks Koepka. What do you think it's fair to compare him to peak Tiger Woods?
Well, I don't know if you can compare anybody to peak Tiger Woods yet. Now, he has that tenacity that Tiger has. He can dig in and he gets more comfortable looking when the heat's on him. The one thing that he's going to get mad at me for saying this that he hasn't done yet is he hasn't won on these tighter golf courses. Now, I could say Bethpage was certainly tight and there was a lot of rough there. He's got the strength to muscle it out of the rough. But this course is a little bit more strategic. Sheer power doesn't win here at Pebble Beach. You've got to be, you know, stellar with iron play, incredible with little chip shots and shots around these greens. And there's rough. When you I'm just looking up the fourth fairway here. If you miss by a little bit, you know, there's some really steep, thick grass, and then it gets a little higher. And sometimes by the green, it's almost unplayable. So you can have some bad luck here. And Koepka's, you know, he's got his work cut out for him because the pressure of playing for these three opens in a row, we saw what it did to Curtis Strange in 88 and 89. We learned about Willie Anderson, the only player that's done it, and that was, you know, in 1903 through 1905. So Koepka's got a lot on his plate this week.
Look, the only thing I question Koepka about, you got to sustain it because that's what made Tiger, Tiger, right, and Jack Nicklaus, Jack Nicklaus. The other thing I would question about him, though, is I think he's unwilling to carry the load that Jack and Tiger did during what we call the regular season, the rest of the tour. He gets up for the big majors. That's my knock on him, is does he want the responsibility of being the true face of golf?
Well, he can't answer that question you just asked. He's won six tournaments out of in his career. He's won four of them in major championships, four of the last eight, as a matter of fact, which is incredible. And that's Herculean or you know, Woods-like. But he's got to be able to contend throughout the season. You know, by the time Tiger had won four majors, I'd have to look to be exact, but I imagine he'd won over 20 tournaments by then. So Koepka needs to get in the picture more of the other times. And it's something he's brought up himself, too. He goes, he doesn't know why he hasn't won more, because when he's won his majors, he's made it look pretty easy.
Now, are you buying Koepka? He isn't thinking about the three-peat, as he says?
Well, I mean, he's got a strong mind. I'm sure he's heard enough of it by now, and when he gets on the first tee, he's going to, you know, he'll be able to relax and say, you know what, he gets his solitude inside of the ropes instead of having to listen to what the media is doing. But if he is in contention on Sunday, and it will be brought up again and again and again, he's going to feel that heat.
Now, what other names should we look out for this weekend outside of Tiger and Brooks Koepka, obviously?
Well, there's so many great stories. We Mickelson, you know, second time.
Well, go ahead.
I was with a guy last night. I'm going to leave this guy nameless that played some golf with Phil last week, and he said he hit it all over the place. Looked awful. Short game was bad. Didn't play well. And that's the Mickelson that we love. You don't know he's going to use two drivers maybe this week on a course that most players might not hit more than three or four drives the whole day. So. He won this year at Pebble Beach in 2019. There's only two players that ever won the U.S. Open and the Pebble Beach tournament the same year, and that's Jack and Tiger. Phil would love that. He'll use that for some motivation. He loves Pebble Beach. He likes the golf course conditions as they are right now. And in the last few days, and really every minute we watch, things are drying up. They're firming up. The ball's not bouncing it's bouncing harder than it was, I'm sorry, on Monday. And Phil doesn't want to get too tough because he's going to be hitting a lot of shots out of the rough because his accuracy off the tee is not great right now. But he'll be able to hit a lot of iron shots and a lot of three woods. I love Rory McIlroy. I mean, McIlroy shot 61
not gonna
Sunday.
Go ahead.
You don't like any pick.
I'm about to tell you what's going to happen.
I'll tell you what. I'll take Rory McIlroy. You can pick whoever you want. Patrick Cantlay is a good pick. He won the Memorial two weeks ago.
Not going to happen. Go ahead. Brad, let me tell you what's going to happen.
Anybody named Tiger Woods not going to happen.
No, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen.
I'll take the
field. No. Brad, here's what I want you to do. I'm on my way to Pebble Beach. I'll be there at 8 o'clock. Here's the bet I want to make with you. And I'm on a hot streak. The PGA, on Wednesday before the PGA, I said Tiger won't make the cut. Brooks Koepka's going to be dominant.
He did.
I said that. I can send you the essay.
He did.
Okay.
There's three people that can win this tournament this weekend. Give me these three guys. You can have the rest of the field. We got $100 on it. I want Tiger, I want Koepka, and I want Dustin Johnson.
I can have everybody else put Dustin in there, and he's a great pick. I think Dustin Johnson is a real story here. He's got Butch Harmon, who went into, you know, his longtime coach, kind of went into retirement. He's been on the range with Dustin. Dustin's taken this seriously. He will be in contention on Sunday, I can guarantee it. I wouldn't be surprised to see Justin Rose. Is that a not going to happen?
I can't go that strong on that one.
Hey, Brad,
it's not gonna happen.
Give me the top three golfers you have the field. I think I win. That's easy money right there, Jason.
That wasn't a bet.
So you get Tiger, Brooks, and Dustin. I'll take McIlroy, Cantlay, and I'll throw Rose in there. We'll go at it.
Oh,
Casa Dragones.
I'm in the landslide. I'll see you in a bit. Thank you, Brad.
You owe him some money.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, Coutinho Mobley and Rick Bucher are back. Let's return to some breaking news out of the NBA Finals. Kevin Durant just posted a picture on Instagram saying he ruptured his Achilles and has successful surgery today. He also wished his teammates luck in Game 6. All right, for his part, head coach Steve Kerr was asked today if he would do anything differently, and he said, quote, "Would we go back and do it over again? Damn right. But that's easy to say with the results. The Achilles came as a complete shock." All right, we're going to keep this question simple. Whose statement do you like better, Kevin Durant from the hospital bed or Steve Kerr from the podium at the NBA Finals?
I don't like Steve Kerr's because when you're talking about being shocked and someone injured, affecting their prime, affecting their game, and the damn right, it's kind of like there's a thorn with that. There's a harsh, like concrete conviction with that, which may have, for me, different reasons for saying it so strongly. And I don't like that because I think there's a sensitivity that should be played in your conversation, in your words, in your expressions for somebody who's taken a greater loss than you. But damn right seems like it may be playing for a narrative out there that is saying that the Golden State Warriors knew more about the injury or the injury was more than what was being explained. So that kind of triggered me. Easy money sniper, hey, you went to New York, supposed to get some work done, supposed to get looked at, things changed. So I'm not so mad at that, but Steve Kerr kind of caught me off guard.
Yeah, Steve's statement is defiant.
Yeah.
We did the right thing.
No. I think he's saying, in retrospect, we would have done it differently had we known the result. But that's easy to say with the results.
Would we go back and do it over again, meaning we would do it different?
Yes, that's what I think he's trying to convey, yes.
What's funny to me is what you're saying, we would do it different. What I took from that, when that reporter asked him the question, he said he deferred to Bob.
Right.
Meaning to me, just to me, meaning I wasn't okay with that anyway. That's to me. I could be totally wrong, because you're so outspoken in everything else, you should be outspoken in this. So that means that you were kind of by yourself, or you even thought in your head, I don't think he's ready, or something else is going on. You
played him 12 or 14 minutes, his actions.
Right, but you play a person 12 or 14 minutes because sometimes, even though I feel confident in my conviction, doesn't mean when that guy's on the, if he's giving me 4 or 5 sacks in the first half, no matter what it is, I'm keeping him in because he's a baller. If I take him out, he's going to be mad at me.
But you also don't want to take out a guy who's returning from injury because you don't want him to get cold.
Like, that's,
you
gotta keep, that's another point.
You got to keep him out there for longer
that's
duration.
That's the point. He had 3 threes in the first quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the other part. What I don't like is that we have these two different statements. We still don't have a collective approach. Right. Last I checked, Kevin Durant is still part of the Golden State Warriors. And for all the different things.
No, he's in New York.
Well, he's in New York, but technically till July 1, he is under the guise of the Golden State Warriors. Can we all collectively, this is a serious enough issue and injury, and there have been enough questions up to this point. Can we get everybody on the same page, and can we answer this collectively?
Or are not we going to just... along, Rick.
Rick, here's the thing. This is why damn right triggers me. Say I lead you guys and say, hey man, let's, back in grade school, high school, let's ditch school and, you know, have some fun out there. And something happens. Get hit by a car or something bad when you got to, oh, God. And then if someone says, wow, would you do the same thing again? No one would say yes to that. And no one would say damn right to even put an exclamation to that. Because of result, you want to change course. Because of result, you would say something different. Well, even if you don't want to change your decision, the results will make you soften how you express that. I don't like when you just, damn right, you know? And then you didn't come out and say it. The reason they didn't come out and say it, I feel from my experiences, is because the messaging wasn't clear. It wasn't concise. It wasn't congruent. There were too many arms and hands in the mix of the pot of what Kevin Durant's injury was. So since we don't know exactly what we're going to say, only you're going to say it, and we'll kind of take cover from that.
The other part here is, if you read it in full, what KD is saying, he's talking about his brothers. He's talking about the guys in the locker room. There's no talk about the team collective. There's no, I feel like there's a line being drawn here. There's no, this would be a great opportunity to say, hey, I took the risk, or mention something about the advice that the doctors gave him.
Yeah.
He avoids all of that. I played because that's what I do and because I wanted to help my brothers. And he walks that particular line. Nothing about some of the questions about what the advice was, what the medical advice was, where he stands with the team. And he well could have answered that, because he has to know as well as we do. Yeah. That's the big question going forward.
Let me say this, and this is why I agree with you. The my brother's deal is, I think,
that's a separation.
Yes, because he has heard, he didn't see it, but he's certainly probably seen videos of Bob Myers crying on TV and looking distraught and blah, blah, blah. So he could recognize that. The owner of the team has made some comments. He could recognize that. Steve Kerr, he could say something about his coach. He's good with his teammates, but the rest of y'all, he's got some questions about. And this is a very smart statement. He doesn't take any direct shots, but anybody closely looking at this will know that there's some separation between he and the organization. He's in New York. This isn't coming from the Golden State Warriors organization, team, doctors, staff. Hey, Kevin had successful surgery. We're in the hospital with him. All these people that care, allegedly, and crying on TV, they're wherever the game's at.
Look, here we go. Bob Myers, those tears, for me, felt like tears of guilt. Your contribution to the catastrophe that happened on that court. Your contribution was second by a lot of other people's emotions, who put the passive-aggressive pressure on KD, who gave him the overt pressure. Whatever it is, that was the reaction I felt when I saw that injury post-game. 20 minutes ago, Steve Kerr came out and said there are no updates on Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant posted on his Instagram within this span. Mama is on Good Morning America. I told you it's an onion. Mama's going to be good cop. Be bad cop. KD going to be good cop. Say nothing. Keep it close to the vest. We're going to figure this out because we know damn well we didn't say the same thing going into this because this wouldn't be the result.
It's such a gray area from Steve, like I said before, to defer to Bob as far as the question and then say damn right. It's just so confusing to me. It's hard for me to get my finger on it to understand exactly what's going on. But like what you guys are saying, especially Jason, when you're talking about, like, he's just for his boys. Everybody else, like, it's some confusion.
Something
it's some
happens to you,
heads.
I'm not
it's
coming over your house saying I would do it again or damn right. When I'm talking to someone who is just victimized, someone who went through it, I soften that expression, and for some reason, they won't. Yeah.
Look, he says, I wanted to be out there that night because that's what I do. I wanted to help my teammates on our quest for a three-peat. This is where I do agree with Richard. Every athlete can relate to that. Mm-hmm. Can relate to that without question. I'm even sitting here now thinking about before my senior year at Ball State, I had a torn ACL. I can remember being in the doctor's office saying, please don't say my ACL's torn. And when the guy came back and told me it was stretched, I celebrated.
Right.
I celebrated. It was torn.
Right.
I played all season on a torn ACL and had the surgery after the season. But I've been in that where you want to prove a point to everybody.